So, welcome to the amazingly long, hopelessly complex. It hasn't happened yet. Don't run away. I just wanted to discourage
you. It's been amazingly long
already.
Calculated to make me really feel. Which is this year on Vayakel and Pekudei and the Siyum of Sefer Shemot and Parashat Parah and also on Shabbat because we're making a wedding of my youngest daughter this Friday, Bezrat Hashem. We also incorporated a little bit of this. It's pretty complicated, but it was very natural. It's not one of these rabbinic shiurim where you seek to find things you can use. Is exactly to the issue. So let's talk about the confluence of the various striking things come up. So first of all, we have, of course, the very moving, at least to me, closing of Sefer Shemot, in which, like this amazing moment of conclusion, really, of the entire story, the sense of Bereishis until this moment, in which the Shekhinah has been searching for a place, in which the original Bishvil Yisrael, Shenikra Reishis, and the dreams and hopes of creation, which as we saw earlier, were the Shochni V'tochan. The idea here is specifically, as the Ramban points out, actually many of the Rishonim point out, that the Lishochni V'tochan is a tremendous chiddush, and that it means that is not a Tzorach Hedyot. We misinterpret the book, we misinterpret the story of the Olmoid, if we take the simple surface level in which it looks as if Klal Yisrael needs a translation of Maimed Har Sinai and Klal Yisrael needs the Shekhinah to be with them, and because of this, it's part of Moshe Rabbeinu's Tefillah, Halo Velech Tefillah Imanu, so we're zochet to a Mishkan, and the Mishkan is the Tikkun for the Ego, allows us to have continued access to the presence of the Shekhinah, the Dibur to Moshe, and so on. But the idea of the Shochnim B'tocham, as the Ramban points out, and he says that it's pretty surprising that the Ibn Ezra knew this sod. This is a tremendous sod, which is that actually the Mishkan is not Tzorach Hedyot, Tzorach Gavua. And it relates to the idea we find later on, the Tefillah, the Nevi'im, Ma Ta'aseh L'Shimcha HaGadol, as if the shame becomes nifkam kevayochol in the loss of the Mishkan, the loss of the Beis Hamikdash, so that the entire idea really of the opening promise Avram Avinu, and the mayafunal pamayach banalim batnadiv, which we take to mean as a, you know, again, once we have a Mishkan, we have a Beis Hamikdash, we refer to Klal Yisrael, the child of Avram Avinu, the Aliyah, the Vayakel here, which of course becomes the Vayakel, the Mitzvah of Hakel, in the generations to come, in which we go up to this place of Mingash, all of those things are not afterthoughts. They are the initial plan of what my separation consists of. This is called the Sefer HaGeula, according to the Ramban, because essentially this is the closing of Geula. And once you understand that, and you recognize that this is not just a mere foreshadowing of the nature of Geula to come, and a third Beis HaMikdash, the permanence of the Beis HaMikdash, but that, in essence, the Batei HaMikdash were constructed around the Mishkan, and not vice versa. So that, as Chazal tell us, Shlomo HaMelech created a place for the Mishkan. And that Mishkan was Atzei Shittim HaImdim, which means that they're HaImdim Le'olmei and Le'olomei. And the Medrash says that even all elements, even the animal life around the Mishkan, even the parim that would carry the Mishkan in the wagons that were given to Levim later, they also are chai v'kayam la'olamim. They are eternal parim, eternal Mishkan. And this is in the same sense that we learn about the mokum of the Mishkan itself being not of our space. It's basically an hyperspace, which is why we can't measure the mokum of the Arim. So too, in a sense, is it in a different time. So the Olam Moed, which is Mishkan Zimna, it's Zimun, in terms of Zman, Zeman in terms of space, is a place for appointments, but its appointments are appointments with eternity. And therefore, the things that happen afterwards are all expressions of what was in this Mishkan initially. Which is amazing. You weren't supposed to tell anybody. You made that up before. But find out what's wrong with that software. So, it's okay. When you read it with that in mind, and that of course is the deepest meaning of the Siyum of Sefer Shmos, the Siyum of the Sefer Geula, understanding all of the prerequisites for Geula and all the pieces of Geula that are in place, and now it's just sort of playing itself out. And the way the Smag calls the book, it's the only book that he gives a number to. The Sefer Bereishis, and there's the various others. This is called the Sefer Hashemi. And Mefarshim explained the reason the Sma calls it the Sefer Hashemi is because it is indeed the second, it's Bereishis too. That's the point. So that in the entire story of Bereishis, we spoke about Halicha. It was all about Halicha. It was all about the hopes of discovering a Amayim, a Lech Lecha, a Vitalech Lefanai, which here becomes in Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah, Halo Belech Techa Imanu, in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Shlomo HaMelech, Hayiti Mithalech B'Mishkan, I was B'Oel B'Mishkan, I was walking around. Taking that into consideration, when we read those closing words, Ganan Hashem Al HaMishkan Yomam Ve'esh Tiel Laila Bo Le'inei Ko Beit Yisrael, that Le'inei Ko Beit Yisrael reminds you of the theme of Kol HaTorah Kulo, Le'inei Ko Yisrael, which of course comes back to what this Mishkan is here for, which was that's a reference there to the Shviras Aluches Le'inei Ko Yisrael, as Rashi said, the Chol Masehem, and all their journeys. We don't even know about journeys yet. Right? So this is prefiguring a future, the Chol Masehem. In of course, we became the wandering people in terms of Mishkan and Mikdash, and became known throughout the world as the people that wander, the people that go from place to place, and whose Mokom becomes the Am Mefuzarim Mefurad Bina Amim, as part of the introduction to the building of the second base of Mikdash, which we just finished in Purim. There's something to me extremely moving about that. The idea of Be'alot Ha'anan, and Vayi Ben Soa Ha'anan, that we see later in the sense that we are in the hands of a something beyond, of a Shechina, which is the Mokar of my Sabereshis, of the Anan that surrounds the earth itself and that sets it apart in space as a place for life. This is that Mishkan. So there's that. That's the profound conclusion to the Sefer HaGula. Then there's the beautiful beginning of that final parsha that consists of those five psukim. And that's the Vayechasa Anan et Omoi, Kvod Hashem Maleat HaMishkan. Then one of the most shocking psukim, V'lo Yochol Moshe Lovo El Omoed, Yishachan Alav HaAnan. We're talking about all the years of project, of all of this time, so many people, and everything that was involved in it. It was Kasher Tziva Hashem et Moshe, or it was V'yata Tetzaveh, and it was in the final analysis, it was Moshe Rabbeinu's actual Akomas HaMishkan. And he was the only one who was capable of putting it together. I mean, the thought that after all of that planning and after all of that understanding, that what is achieved is something so mind-blowingly beyond what it is that you thought you put into it. But you have your little plans to follow and your little life to lead. And the result is that what comes out of that asiyah is so beyond your own input that you literally can't walk into it. That it's so staggering that you can't walk into it. Now this becomes, of course, the essence of Mishkan is its emergence, is the way in which it's possible for there to be a structure which becomes the mokum for creation itself. It becomes hamokum to give the Mokam, just as HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kavayochel is called HaMokam, as the Medrash says, it's called HaMokam, Ki Ani Mekomo Shel Olam, V'lo HaOlam Mikomi. In that sense, it's called the Mishkan Mokam, and it includes the Ashras HaShechina. It has that element to it as well, that it's creating ultimate emergence that we would never, as Moshe said, in the Medrash, it doesn't make any sense. And so Shlomo HaMelech writes, to Hiram, ordering the materials, you know, I don't understand it. I mean, and obviously, I'm not intending to build a home in the normal sense of the word. And it becomes more than a metaphor. It becomes the essence of how it is that every human being leads a life. We lead lives in doing Aveda and in doing mitzvahs and learning Torah without really having any full sense of how it could be that something powerful could emerge from this. And very often we feel ourselves struggling and wondering about the significance of the things because we don't see exactly where it could be going. And on the lowest level, we'll see that there's far more to it than that, but on the lowest level, that is one of the most striking things with which the entire Sefer concludes, that after all is said and done, the Aveda that we do goes far, far beyond, in the end result, than any of our plans. And then the third element that we had, which was a very unique confluence, is Parshas Parah. To have Parshas Parah together with Vayakel and Pekudah is extremely rare. As a matter of fact, in all of the, I was looking over the, at least the recent Shirim, the past 20 years of Shirim, and there's not a single Parshas Parah with Vayakel and Pekudah. We've got just about any other configuration, but not that one. Could be maybe in the earlier Shirim, I don't recall. So that's something special. And it's not just a question of the reading, it's the actual event. It's when Parshas Parah was set on this day. This is the day of the Yom HaKodesh HaRishon Bashanah HaShinit. This is when this happened. This is when the Shechinah was Bemale, the Mishkan. And the Gemara in Gittin tells us that the Parsha Parah was said on that day. So it's not as if we're reading, you know, just accidentally, we're talking about Parshas Parah, but it's fundamentally part of this story, and it has to be part of the story, that this is the time in which it was necessary to give us that Parsha itself. So, of course, my own personal life, this was a confluence of the wedding of the youngest child. It's very, very sweet. It gives it a special feeling. So, all of these things, we have to remember that the Parshas Parah itself and the entire period is a very unique period. Now, it's a period that we laughingly call the PPPP, you know, just for the Arba Parshas, Parsha, which also means the post-Purim pre-Pesach, which also means the Porah and the Peter Pan Potter kind of, you know, and there's all kinds of Ramazans in those things. But in any event, there is clearly an attempt by Chazal. It's not a small thing because we know that La Halacha Rukoveya, when it is that Purim should take place, whether it's an Arishon or Sheni, based on exactly this, that the Mismach Gula LeGula is Adif, you know, there is some kind of profound connection between the two elements of Purim and Pesach, even though they seem very, very different, almost contradictory in their ambience and in their assumptions, in their underlying assumptions about the nature of Nes as the essence of Pesach and the end of Nes as the essence of Purim with all of the implications that are involved in that. Nonetheless, the Mismach Gula LeGula is seen as start to finish and finish to start, and that the four parshas that are given to us to be mechaber these times are meant to provide a transition that allows us a deeper understanding of their interrelationships, and Parah, of course, is very, very much part of that. And it's not only that.
Mishnah Nechnasadah goes to Pesach, is
she done? Sorry.
Mishnah Nechnasadah Marvin Besimcha goes to Pesach.
Correct. Yes, beautiful, beautiful. So it's actually Mishnah Nechnasadah, that's the beginning of the period. And Marvin Besimcha continues on, we get to the actual day of Pesach. But in terms of Parah itself, the period and the entire idea in the Torah is, of course, interrelated because the concept of mortality, its relationship to Adam, ki yobos ba'ol, brings us back to the egel itself. There's the Shviras HaLuchas, which was supposed to be the Mokar of Cherus, the Chorus HaLuchas, the Cherus HaLuchas, Cherus for the Malach HaMavis. And, you know, the Ani Amarti Elohim Atem, Vnei Yon Kuchim, all of that, the loss of the Adoyim that were meant to be the Kalim, provide Adi. Adi has a double meaning. It means Adi, so to speak, forever. Ad. The loss of the Adoyim and the loss of the Beis HaMikdash, it's a reconstruction. The Mishnah Nechnasadar is connected to Mishnah Nechnasav, obviously, as the Gemara puts it in Tainis. the actual events with the reconstruction of the Beis HaMikdash at the time of Esther, construction of Mishkan here, the Tikkun of Maimon Har Sinai, in the sense of Kaf Aleihem Har Chagigis being the Modar Rabbah Leoraita, the reconstruction and Kimu VeKibul, and the simple interrelationship of Pur with Kapora, with Pora. I mean, they're all coming for the same purposes. So that the Pora is actually coming for Kapora and Pur itself, which is identifying the time as being a relationship to randomness and to Pur, brings us straight back to the first day in which all of this happens, which was Yom HaKippurim. All of this is Mimochras Yom HaKippurim, and the famous Arizal that interrelates those 2 days, Yom Kippurim, Yom Kippurim, and that being the beginning of the intrusion of chaos and randomness into our Avena, because the first time that we actually do what Amma did, you know, Kiyu, is we do a Gura on Yom HaKippurim. And somehow that itself becomes the strange Gura in which good and evil are almost the same, in which we choose a Sa'ir La'Hashem and a Sa'ir La'Azazel, seemingly at random, which is a frightening kind of thought, which touches on the deepest aspects in ourselves that relate to Kapar and the deepest doubts that we have about ourselves and deepest confusions. Right? I mean, if you're able to call exactly the same thing, total opposites, I mean, La'Hashem and La'Azazel, you think, what is that supposed to say about the intrusion of randomness and chaos into my own thinking and my own thoughts and my own psychological development and my own drives and my own honesty or dishonesty. I mean, these are not small issues. And Pura that comes to deal with the underlying issue of Kapara and its relationship as well to this period of chaos. And when I say PPPP, I really mean it. There's a feeling specifically about this time of the year. And it isn't just this year, the elections, which were super chaos. I don't think it's just change in the seasons that is very confusing hits you psychologically. But there's something very deep about the way in which we search. That's from the beginning of Parsha Zohar. We search for the meaning of memories in terms of personal memories, memories of nations, which we call histories, how real they are, how chaotic they are, their man-made creations out of what came to us, personal histories, national histories, things that never necessarily happen the way we say they happen, and we can allow either our psychiatrists to take apart on a personal level or our, you know, new historians to take apart on the national level, but there's profoundly part of the sense of going all the way back to the Egel, the Mechayleis Egel, the original problems that the Mishkan somehow comes to address. Okay, so if that's the case, we don't have to look far for finding the common thread in these events and in these kriyas. But we should look for a key, maybe, in trying to see how they're interrelated. One of the striking keys, I mean, one of the things that the Torah does is it provides a remarkable number of iterations. I just keep repeating the story of the Mishkan, which we spoke about last year, the Rebbeinu Bachya, about the idea of Chavivus, and the way that, you know, it isn't really about informational content, it's about Chavivus. It's sort of like the Maisib of the Avdi Avais that HaKadosh Baruch Hu finds very Chaviv. That's all very nice, but obviously there's a lot that is meant to be implied by a Mishkan that's introduced prior to the Ego, and then reintroduced post the Ego, and the story of the Ego comes right in the middle, and Chazal keep telling us about Yavoz Zahav Sheba Mishkan, Yechapar Al Zahav Sheba Ego, and many, many different ways in which we find that ultimately the Ego is embodied in the Mishkan, in the way that you know, the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah was found in the Mishkan at the Gemar Numa after a long search and fast to be able to try to somehow influence the Yetzer Hara directly. Very, all kinds of strange things. I mean, there's more than just the presentation in the Torah that's telling us that these things are deeply, deeply interrelated. But the constant repetition, it's almost as if any possible opportunity that we could have of mentioning again the story of the Mishkan, and again the story of the Nidvei HaMishkan, and with subtle variations in terms of the structure and the order and the things that are put together. This is a very odd kind of thing. I mean, because I mean, we start, of course, with the original Tzivui in Truma, with the actual first the Nedavas, and then what it is that we're going to be doing with them, and then we move on into Tzava to the description of what it is that we're supposed to be doing for the Bigdei Kahuna and the Milui. You know, then interrupt with Kitisa, with some afterthoughts, which are all strange afterthoughts to hear about the Kiyor. After we finish the whole thing. And of course, the Kiyor in our parsha, boom, all of a sudden, it takes on an entire parsha by itself and sticks out like a sore thumb, and all the others we'll talk about when we get closer to understanding the issues. And then, once again, you know, so it's Yom Kippur, Moshe Rabbeinu comes out, and we have the review, just as Kiti Sar, we have Shabbos, we have an introduction to Mishkan, so here we have once again Rayaku with Shabbos introducing it. And once again, we have a list of, okay, all the materials that we need, and here are what we're going to be going for. And then we have the description of the people bringing all the materials. And then we have the description we had earlier about the fact that Chazal is going to have to make all of these things. And then we have a whole, once again, repetition of the fact that he did make these things. And then we have the fact that it didn't help to make all these things because he couldn't put them together. So we have a repeat of the entire story in, and so they brought all of these things to Moshe, listing every last thing again. You know, the Yiriyot, and these Yiriyot, and these Greshim, and these Hachimim, and they brought all of the above, detail by detail. You'll never say all of the above. It's telling you what all the above is, yet again, bringing it to Moshe, and what was Moshe with all these things. And he did, but he did every single one of them again. Go through all the story again. And it's really a remarkable story. You know, it's going about six times, eight times. It depends on whether you're including the scriptures of the materials. I mean, wow. That's really, there's only one which the Chazal really concentrated on. That's the famous one of the difference between the presentation, which was top down of Moshe Rabbeinu, bottom up of Bezalel, where he's so despoiled about Bezalel, which you could say, well, I mean, how did you know? And that seems to, it seems to us to be a very prosaic kind of argument to require Bezalel, well, I need that to figure that you're supposed to be building the house before you put the furniture on it. You know, it doesn't sound like brilliant issues until you realize they never made the house to put in the furniture because the entire thing, as we learn here, was put into a garage until it was time for this time of the year, for this summer. And all of the, so where are you going to put them? Well, anyway, we didn't, you know, they just sort of stayed around for the next months. So the matter of surprise was getting a little nervous. What happened to the big project? We'll put it together eventually. It was actually finished on Hanukkah, which is why Hanukkah, you know, becomes the day of the reconstruction of the reconstruction. Amazing kind of story. And there's this difference, as I'll point out, between the top down and the bottom up kind of thing, is very, very much what strikes us about the nature of creation as well. And creation is also very, very much a bottom up story from our point of view. So that, I mean, in trying to work backwards, in trying to figure out the evolutionary history of our coming into being, the things that happen in the universe to make that possible. And it's like, it's all bottom up. It's completely unplanned. It's completely, you know, undesigned. It has no sense of the top-down element that it involved. So that we can, you know, we read of the story of Moshe Bereishis. It's a totally different take. Very similar to Moshe Rabbeinu's take, which of course is part of the idea that the Medrash repeats so many times, that the structure of the Mishkan is meant to actually define the nature of creation. Not only to use Bezalel in Bezalel, but you have the idea of Bezalel with Tzarek and the Yisrael Yeshiva going Shamayim Boretz, but even to the questions about, well, top down the bottom up. Was Shemayim Nivakila or was Arex Nivakila?
which I might tell. Was the order never appealing? Was the order put in afterwards? It's an afterthought. But the question is, how do we view our vision of creation in those terms? So there's something that is touching very deeply on some of the deepest subliminal issues that we have about, like, where do we fit in? Where is the meeting point of the top down to the bottom up? Where is the meeting point between the vision of the tikva that is innate and gracious, and that sees the Shalpi B'Tolcham as the ultimate goal of all of this? Where's the meeting point in that? And lives like our own, which seems to be so filled with randomness and accidents and mistakes and things that would never happen again precisely the order and way that they happen. And, you know, you're wondering if that little thing hadn't happened, so how different would I be today? And how does that fit in? Have I taken the other road? Have I started the car 10 minutes later? Or whatever. I mean, so then you wonder, which of course is exactly what the issues of Pur and the paradoxes of Pura and the questions of the Shnasir and the Yamaki Purim and the Bahadur. They're touching directly on that, even if you don't articulate to yourself, you feel it very profoundly. And that means that in order to truly find an understanding of how it is that Bria connects us, connects Akadagorku, to this idea of the mission, what we're really talking about is the discovery of ourselves and the discovery of our place in the universe and ultimate energy point. I think that there's a very surprising key here. The key is found in reading the Midrash. So, one of the strangest of all, everybody's familiar with the Gemara in Saita, even if they didn't learn Saita, because they undoubtedly learned Rashi. And the Rashi, this is really what is the chab at the beginning of this book, but the end of the book. And that's important to see, because it's Chazal Dalas. We need to look at the beginning and the end, but we get an hint of what's going on. It occurred to us. And when we read that lovely story at the beginning of the book, the story about a mother and a daughter. Looks like a mirror that comes out to me. And okay, they're most of efforts to be able to make sure that the boys live. So it says that a control is made proof the mirror thing. Vayaslam Batim. What are those Batim? Well, actually, what's the most of them? The Batim are Bate Kuluna, and Bate Ravia, and Bate Malchus, and from Yocheved. It was Moshe Aaron, and from Miriam, who traces the whole, you know, Ephratim, and this is, she's called Ephrat. But this means is that ultimately Gabriel comes from Miriam. You can work on this elsewhere in detail, and analyzing the Rayami, it's Miriam's relationship. Well, there's a very different take on that, but in the Medrash. And it's so fundamentally different that it leaves you like open now. It doesn't even make any sense. It doesn't seem to make any sense in the surface. So after describing the incredible precociousness of Bezalel and what his chokhmah was capable of achieving, so it asks the Kol Hashemah Hazinai. It says, "Where did all of this amazing time come from? Zachar Lokoach of Masim." This would Miriam. What do you see? Shemema, Vayasahem, Batim. Umaha Yuha Batim, says the name. The Batim, Beit HaKuluna, who Beit HaMalchut. So he leaves out the Leviah, which is why he leaves out the Leviah. Because Yocheved, this is really good. Yocheved, not Bar Kuluna, Malchut. It doesn't mean anything over there. Miriam, but okay, unless I heard this new thing, it's got this type of things with people. You can't get two of them to one of them, but maybe I just, you know, so I have a good mathematics background. So when it says over here that Yocheved was not like Kunan Malchut, where's that? It's Aaron, it's Aaron's a fine girl, and Moshe is called a Malchut. It says, well, you be sure Noah. And that leaves for Miriam, yes, well, she was not like Kunan. But you said there were two books in the before. Yes, she was not a chachma, Because she was the Amida Bitzal. Oh, and by the way, you know, there was another king. Because Yatsumi men of Dovich, oh, yeah, no, I'm coming. Dovich was also a king, so maybe that's how it would be, you know. But sure doesn't sound like that, right? I mean, for Malchus, the reality of Malchus is Yatsa from Dovich. Moshe was a one time Malchus. Joan wasn't so. So the Kester of Malchus. What exactly is it referring to when it's talking about this father? So if we take a look again at the opening to Rabbi Lubavitch, what he talks about is interestingly enough, the same chokhmah, the eich chokhmah v'nafshecha imatzah. Eich chokhmah v'nafshecha imatzah. What is that remez of imatzah? It's basically as Rabbi Lubavitch has explained us. There is a fundamental body out of which comes all other sense of bati. And that fundamental bite is, as it says in the Pasuk Mishnah, Chokhmah on the top. The etzem bite is Chokhmah. The original bite, which is the letter bait, which we've discussed so many times. So letter bait itself is a bite, and it is open on its right side with that little piece sticking out. To be, so it draws from prior to the creation story, which in our terms is complete ayin, which is the ultimate being, because the closest we get to any sense of ultimate being is complete nothing. You blank your mind out of any particular, you don't have enough everything. There's that the underlying sense of this to be, you cannot imagine something that is not. So that's that ayin. The timatze hachokhmah, the ayin timatze can be found only from ayin. That in matzata is only the remnant that the Medrash is saying. The bite that was given to Miriam is a bite that is kola, all these other bites. It's the bite of chokhmah itself. And that is what it was that the Tzalah was open to. It was open not to the kelim of Kochma. You're like, okay, it's very clever, very talented. It wasn't Zohar to the king. It was Zohar to the very space in which it becomes evident that all of the Kalim that are involved are simple artifacts within that Kochma. Exactly the same type of thing that we find in people who are insanely precociously talented. You know, I mean, it's very rare. It's once every couple of generations that you'll find, you know, a little child that can walk over to a musical instrument and begin playing it and creating music with it, having never touched it before, but simply because it just speaks to them, because this is where I live. I live in this band. And that's exactly how the Ramban describes the nature of the involvement of those who are in the Mishnah, people that were untrained, had never been exposed to any of this before. And this is the meaning of Hashem Nisa'alibu. The difference between Kolmin Dibway, in terms of giving the donation, and Nisa'alibu, that they're simply uplifted to throw themselves into something they know nothing about, by being completely at home with it. With this key, after Meyer, which is about to begin, with this key, there's a Hashem, perhaps we can come closer to understanding of the real issues that lie behind this conference.